Joining me in the Catalyst studio today is Linda Olson from Tampa Bay Wave. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
I guess we connected many years back with SavvyCard when we were participating in the Wave. But Wave goes back way, way before that. Mm-hmm. And we're here to hear the origin story. So let's go all the way back to the beginning when it was just an idea. What were the circumstances that led up to the idea of Wave forming in your head?
Well, to be honest, I was one of those entrepreneurs back in the day. So there was really no one organization where you could easily find other tech entrepreneurs. If you wanted to find your peer group and just go talk to them, you know, pour your heart out, ask for help, those kinds of things, it was really hard. You had to kind of have a whole bunch of your own just individual friendships and relationships. And I kept seeing there were so many reasons for each person I was connected to be connected with each other. And I said, well, let's just put everybody in the same room one night. That's really how it started. And it was pretty powerful. That was June of 2008.
Mm, right? About 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Just a little over 10 years ago. And there was something that just was magical about that evening because so many of us had never been in a room with all these other entrepreneurs. And it was kind of like, wow, there really is already quite a few people here doing some cool things that are just kind of under the radar. Even though I was a tech entrepreneur, it just didn't really impress upon me until I saw it in a room. And I don't know, like we found a lot of reasons to say like, well, let's just get together again. This was great, you know, and we did it a second time.
About how many people were in that first meeting?
18 or 19 people, right?
And what were you doing? So you were an entrepreneur at the time. What company were you working on? What idea?
So I was doing something called Wombeat with a business partner, Mark Mant. So we were trying to put word of mouth online. Hmm. So we were doing this, how to connect people to good recommendations from their friends. Mm. And at the time we were putting this together, we saw Yelp was starting to emerge. And I would still argue that for all that Yelp has done, we kept saying like, that's a broken business model because maybe I'd like a popular restaurant, but if I'm going to have somebody come into my own house or be around my kids or I don't know, like a doctor or things like that, I always trust a personal recommendation from somebody I know before a referral from a stranger.
Right.
So that was kind of the thought process behind that. And we were kind of building it out and starting to try to experiment with some traction, but we were having challenges with finding the right technical talent, finding the right investors, all those kinds of things that go along with it. But when you put everybody in the room together, you found out all of our challenges were very similar because it was an ecosystem problem. Most of our challenges were not unique to our businesses, but we were all trying to do that in Tampa Bay, and it was frustrating.
So you have these first couple of meetings, then where did the idea to formalize it and put some structure around it, when did that start to take shape?
It was interesting. I literally put a name on it by the third meeting because I'm like, well, if we're going to do this on a regular basis, I want to at least say like, hey, are you going to the such and such meeting? I'm like, I'm going to put a label on it. That was early on. Somewhere around 2011, we kind of decided to come out of the closet, if you will, and put a website together. And I say that was a big transition for our organization. We really were not dues-paying members. We really weren't trying to grow a membership, but we felt like this is a story that people don't know. They don't know that there's all these startups here. Like, we need to at least put a website together and let people help find the collection of us.
WAVE was the name from the beginning?
Yep. Yep. WAVE was an acronym for Web Venture Entrepreneurs with a lowercase a to make it a nice word for good measure kind of thing. If you remember 2008, you know, the iPhone wasn't super big yet. It was just kind of coming out, and apps, which are so prevalent now, was not really a thing so much in 2008. So we were web venture entrepreneurs, even though it's definitely beyond just web today.
So you went all the way from 2008 to 2011 with sort of a loose...
Right. Just monthly meetings, a peer network. You know, we would get together every month, but we definitely wanted to foster our relationships outside of the monthly meetings so that we could just kind of help our company succeed. But as we had this website, kind of like more people started finding us, more people than we could help, because most of us already had something built. We had a little traction. We were trying to grow a business. And I had people finding us on the web saying, I have an idea. Can you hook me up with a developer? Or I'm trying to work on something. Do you know any investors? You know, very super early stage questions. And I was saying like, I hate turning people away and saying, I don't have a referral for you. I can't send you to another organization. You know, I mean, nothing was kind of there.
Especially if you put yourself out there for that, right?
Like I kept saying, we're really just a monthly meetup group. But So anyways, we decided to, well, let's sketch this out. Like, what could we do if we could organize ourselves a little bit better?
By 2011, were you still working on One Beat or had you moved on to something different?
I was, but in right around 2011 is when the Wave process started shaping. We went to people in the community, Tony DiBenedetto, who was the CEO of Tribridge at the time, Rebecca White from University of Tampa, John Gordon, who's an investor at Stage One Ventures. You probably know he's put some money in some companies in St. Pete and things, trying to like put together a strategic plan. Michelle Royal was actually very instrumental in helping a lot of that. And somewhere around summer of 2012, we kind of wrapped that up and said, okay, we have a strategic plan, but how do we go fund this thing? How do we get the money to hire people to do what we said we could do? And that's when we saw a federal grant opportunity come along. We had registered as a 501c3, and that was kind of by design from the beginning. We said, if we are going to organize ourselves, if we're going to try to do something, it's really not myself or anybody involved was looking to personally profit. Mm-hmm. It was for the community that we love and care about and try to grow the ecosystem so that there would be more resources for entrepreneurs. So 501c3 just in our gut was the right type of organization to do this for us.
Does that preclude you from owning equity or investing in that way? Or
it's challenging.
Challenging, okay.
And it's one of those things that needs like almost surgical precision to do it without tripping up the IRS. So we kind of have stayed clear of that.
So you knew when you're going 501c3 that you probably wouldn't be the type of organization that would worry about equity in the companies.
Correct. So, okay, we'll look at other funding sources. I don't come from a 501c3 or nonprofit background. I don't come from economic development. I've never raised sponsorship money. I've never filed for grants, foundation grants, CDA grants, any of these things. Sometimes I say I probably am the least qualified person to do what I do. I was, you know, naive enough not to know better at the time. So we saw this federal grant opportunity and I said, you know, someday we will be in a position to file for one of those grants. 2 days later, I get a phone call from a woman in Orlando who said, hey, did you see this federal grant opportunity? I'm like, well, I did, but why do you ask? She says, well, I wrote one of those grants last year for UCF and they won. So I'm willing to kind of offer my services to help certain folks if they would like to also apply for a grant this year, since UCF cannot apply this year. I'm like, well, that changes things. Her name is Kirsty Chadwick, or I think she goes by Kirsty McCool now. But so she was a fantastic resource in helping us put together not just an initial grant application, but the strategy around it. But we also, funny thing how these federal grants work, you have to raise matching funds. So it was $1 million federal grant, but I also had to raise $1 million of matching funds. Oh, and by the time I found out about this grant, the deadline was in 3 weeks. And I said, we might get something across the finish line. It's okay. It's not about winning this grant. It's about finding out who in these community would get excited about what we're trying to do, who might raise their hand and say, I'll support this. And then when we don't get the grant, we can go back to these groups and say like, okay, let's go for a plan B. But as you probably know, we didn't have to go for a plan B. We were very fortunate bringing on some partners into the grant process, like USF and others were probably instrumental. Chuck Sykes. I give him a ton of credit. I try to give him credit every chance I can because he's one of those folks who will never come out there and tell you that he was instrumental, but he definitely was very instrumental in getting us into the Sykes building and making that a big piece of this grant application. So he was instrumental.
It's a lot to pull off in 3 weeks.
It's insane, but serendipitous how it all fell into place.
Did you have to have the matching in when you applied?
We had to have the commitments.
Commitments, right.
Mm-hmm. So in September, we got the news that we had been selected. And I remember I called the EDA office up like a day or two later. And I said, okay, so it's a 2-year grant. I understand there's 24 months to do what we said we're going to do. When does that start? And they're like, it started 2 days ago. I'm like, oh. Like we really went from a zero budget, all volunteer operation with about $2,000 in a bank account. And I now suddenly had to figure out how to get about $120,000 of working capital into my bank in order just to get going. And so I went back to these funding sources. I'm like, good news. We won the grant.
Check,
now I need your check. And I know someone were like, well, that's great, but
you told us we weren't going to win.
Or, you know, I can't do that in this fiscal quarter. You know, we're a publicly traded company or whatever it was. So That's why it took us until March of 2013, like 6 months later, to actually open the Venture Center with the staff and everything. It just took a while to get through all of that. And somehow we only had, 18 months left on that grant period, and we still blew the numbers out of the water.
In March then, when you open, what did the team look like then?
It was myself and three other people. Tiny, right? Yeah. And a whole host of volunteers. When people ask me, how big is your staff? I always say, I can tell you how many people are on the payroll, but you have to understand that it takes a village and not a village of four people. And so many people were doing so many things in a volunteer capacity as board members or in-kind sponsors and things like that.
You had done some loose things as the meetup group, but in the 6 months before you opened, you had to build out programming and build out your services essentially. So what was that process like?
So, we had that initial strategic plan, but at the end of the day, it was still kind of very high level. So there was a lot to fill in. But then you have the challenge because you're trying to build out programs without the staff identified. And sometimes, when you brought the staff on, you need to kind of go back and revisit the plans a little bit. So I will tell you, we launched with, the Venture Center and its set of services and programs, mostly around co-working and office space usage. But we also had a number of programs around what we call the acceleration side of the business. We weren't doing the traditional 90-day accelerator program, but we have evolved to doing that because it just is a better fit for what we're trying to do.
Obviously, you built a strategic plan and you knew you were applying for the grant. You didn't expect to win. But at this point, were you mentally prepared to say, I'm going to shift gears with my life and my professional career and move away from building, traditional tech startup to fostering other people doing this and doing the wave thing?
There was I guess I broke it, I bought it moment.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things, when I lay my head down at night, I go to sleep knowing I'm kind of doing what I'm supposed to be doing, if that can make any sense. I envision at some point I probably will find myself back in a for-profit startup of some sort here. No, I don't have any plans.
No breaking news.
No breaking news, no speculation. But I say I'm trying to build the ecosystem that I would want so that when I do enter, it's got all the resources and things I need. But yeah, no, it was a little bit of a, okay, all right, yep. These things are on the shelf for sure for a while.
What are the things that you remember the most from that? You open your doors in March and then that year, obviously the grant money runs out in 18 months. So you have to think about the years after that. But before we get to that, what are your most vivid memories from that first year after you opened in March as far as, things you didn't expect
Every day brought something new. Every day. It was drinking from the fire hose day in, day out. It didn't stop. And it was 98% for all the right reasons, right? Just new opportunities. People would call up. Companies were excited. Startup companies, local companies. The mayor was always supportive, Mayor Buckhorn in Tampa. But you still had folks like himself and others and, whether they were associated with economic development or other kinds of services in the area going well, what is this group? And are they going to stick around or are they going to burn and fizzle out like some other things had done? Mm-hmm. And I'm always very defensive of those things that have appeared to fizzle out because I'm it's not fair to have expected them to be successful in the ecosystem we had. I think there's a lot of well-meaning people who've tried a lot of big things, bold things, and not everything's going to work out. Maybe a little bit of being in the right place at the right time, but the right people and a lot of momentum. HealthBox is one example, a for-profit accelerator program kind of based in Chicago, I think, who would partner with Blue Cross Blue Shield organizations around the country and wanted to partner with Florida Blue in the state of Florida. And they were looking for a place to operate within the state of Florida. And because of this grant, our location at Sykes, we got on the short list, if you will. And before you know it, yes, we hosted their accelerator program for, I guess more like 120 days in our space, right? But these were amazing opportunities, right? That I never would have put into a plan, but it was hard to say no to a lot of things because they would be so good for our community.
So not that you had to spend all the money that you got in the first 2 years, but then as you approach the end of that 2 years, tell me about the transition into other sources of funding.
Well, it was interesting. When we first got awarded the grant, the EDA invited several of us up to Washington, D.C., where we could meet with our peers who also won the grant, but also with folks who had run the same grant in the prior couple of years. Those folks really impressed on me really quickly. don't wait until like the last couple of months or the last 6 months to start thinking about funding beyond the life of the grant. They're like, you should be thinking about that today. So it was like a race against the clock the whole time. We were in this odd space of, yes, the federal government had kind of blessed this plan and gave us this money, but we didn't have the track record that would make a lot of funding sources comfortable for the type of funding that we needed. But sure enough, you know, 6 months in, 12 months in, as we are starting to do this, we definitely were getting funding sources like at the county and other places who were saying, this, there's something good going on here. Let's not end it just yet. And I feel like I'm always on borrowed time. I never take it for granted that we always have to make sure we're producing results and helping grow these companies, you know, giving them the resources they need so they can grow and hopefully become big breakout successes for all of us.
Sure. All right. So then after you transition, it had to be a good feeling then once you got past the grant money and were still sustainable and you've now grown or earned, I will say, repeating endowed sort of funding. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you were in this sort of middle period coming in the years, you know, 4, 5, and 6 outside of the grant, when you moved, you're obviously more than your staff is bigger now. And so talk about that growth trajectory. And, you know, was that something that just you came naturally or did there were certain things you had to fight for?
Well, I would say we celebrated 5 years of that launch of those programs back in March. So we're right around 5.5 years. We've always wanted to have more people than we could have afforded. Kind of the joys of nonprofit, which I don't complain. But what we were doing is I think we had an initial vision statement, but you can see like sometimes these vision statements need a little bit of refreshing, refinement. Over the last couple of years, we've really said like other people can open up co-working spaces and we don't want to discourage that. We're not trying to compete with that. We really want to help companies become breakout companies. We want Tampa Bay to produce breakout 1, 2, 3 and more, right? And so we really wanted to kind of double down on where our strengths and our core competencies are and kind of where we differentiate ourselves. And it's really around all of our business acceleration services. So it's the 90-day program and the work we do to support the companies beyond those 90 days as well. And as we get more clarity on that and people understand that, then it helps us make sure we're getting the resources we need for the mission that we have at hand. And that helps us, I think, attract the right people and build the staff around that. So it's really been about taking that big idea and getting more crystal clear on it. And then that helps us kind of build the funding and the team around execution.
And what's WAVE look like in 2 years or 3 years? Is it more of the same or are there other areas that you have an inkling to get into?
I think what you're going to see is a couple of things. I think you're going to see that we're going to continue to grow the number of companies that we can support at any one time. So if you look at just our business acceleration services, which includes our 90-day program and the companies that we support kind of like post 90 days, right? We have 50 companies in that today. I think that's a great number to say you got 50 amazing startups. I think that number is going to get even higher. And I want to see that grow because the more that we have a greater critical mass of exciting companies, I think that's going to help our region attract even more resources, including the talent that we want to see come here and stay here, right? I think you're going to see a little bit more specialization. We definitely see clusters within these 50 companies, industry clusters, right? Some people might call them subsectors, but health tech is definitely one. Advertising and marketing tech, education tech is huge. I like to see us build out our cyber tech a little bit more. We certainly have some startups in there. We have amazing mentors with cyber tech. So how do we tell that story better so that we can attract more exciting cyber tech startups to Tampa Bay and grow that for this region? And I think you're going to see even more capital come to Tampa Bay. We're already seeing it. All the early indicators are there. You know, we're fielding inbound calls, emails, whatever, from investor groups up and down the East Coast who are looking for exciting companies, new sources of deal flow, et cetera. So that's kind of the vision of the future I have is money coming here and shopping often.
And, you know, obviously a lot of that is just, you know, natural progression and a strong economy rolling for a while. But I definitely think there have been some trailblazers here. And, you know, WAVE is right there in the mix with that. Some of the earlier companies like LumaStream and SavvyCard and Priya Tech, who, you know, they sort of cleared the swampland of tech here in the area and, you know, got the mosquito bites and got the snake bites and things like that. But I think we're all beneficial for those early pioneers.
Right. I definitely give them all the credit in the world. It takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, clawing and scratching for every nickel and dime they could find to fund their companies and the ecosystem that we had back then. And they were still super successful at it. It wasn't the traditional way. It's not the ideal way, but they powered through it. And I think you're going to see one or more of those companies definitely had a big home run here in this Tampa Bay area for it.
That's great. Well, thank you for all that you do. And thank you for diverting your personal path to be this home for and this facilitator of success and growth in the region, because I don't know if we would have gotten here otherwise.
It takes a village. And I'm just one of many people who are trying to prove that it can be done in Tampa Bay.
Thanks.